It's October 21st, 2013, and you're listening to episode 54 of Nitro Beer Free to Play. I'm Brian Belita, and I have no corporeal form. I'm joined by Matt Pierce.
And I insist that Brian still classifies as a thing.
Imran Khan.
Does that make you like the thing from Beyond? The game, not the actual Beyond.
Yes, the thing from Beyond.com. And Mark Bradshaw.
The only good thing was John Carpenter's The Thing. Because it was actually a real physical thing, and not some digital bullshit.
It was one of the good things.
It was the only good thing.
There's the superhero, The Thing, from the Fantastic Four.
Have you seen him in Salty Bits? He's terrible.
Is he?
Yeah.
The play's The Thing, and
I saw
plays are not like tangible things.
I saw Michael Chiklis' riveting performance of The Thing in the Fantastic Four movies.
I don't think you can say Michael
Chiklis
and riveting anything.
I guess the Shield was the thing that he did.
Yeah, he was a thing.
A thing.
It was a role. It wasn't a thing. It was a role.
They should remake Breaking Bad with Michael Chiklis as Hank.
Yes. You know what? Fuck. You just ruined Breaking Bad.
And Tony Stark.
And
who's the fucking guy? Robert Downey Jr. as Walt. No, it'd be awful. Anyways.
That'd be terrible. He'd overpower the role.
Yeah. So
you actually used meth, I feel like that's probably going to color your way you play that role.
Yeah. Maybe that's how Michael Chiklis became the thing, by meth.
Just like he had so much meth that like the crystal like
he's in his body. So much meth, exactly, yes.
That'd be the worst thing.
There has to be some sort of superhero origin story that involves meth.
I love that that's pretty much how all drugs work in a dystopian sci-fi movie. Like, the people who take the drugs have some really obvious physical symptom you can see on their faces.
Well, I don't know. There was the Dread movie with, I forget the name of the drug they all use, but that just makes it's time slow down for them or whatever. But they didn't really get any deformities. Anyways, I don't know where I'm going with that. But yes, you're right.
They did develop a deformity in that they got shot. By Judge
Most
Dredd.
Of them got shot in the face by Carl Urban as Judge Dredd. So that was a fun movie. I watched that recently. But anyways, let's talk about some things. There were some things that happened.
Wait a minute. I just got an email from Wild Game Studio. We can't talk anymore.
Are we not allowed to talk anymore?
We're not allowed to talk anymore. We've been DMC'd. They knew we were going to talk about Gary's
Internet.
Yeah.
Wait, like
Ron, Devil May Cry?
It's tricky to rock around to rock. Oh, okay. Imran and I went in opposite directions on that one.
I feel like you meant DMC Aid.
Yes, I probably did. Did I say? Wow.
Though if
I
we
say?
Have been Devil May Cry, that's not too bad.
Yeah.
No.
It's okay.
Not
bad. There was definitely an acronym I was supposed to use there. Yeah.
Real quick before we get started talking about things like that. So we're going to be talking about Matt's pick for Literate's Book Club today. That was Gran Turismo 1. And then I will be making my selection next for whenever we talk about that, which will hopefully be in 2 weeks. And that's going to be a cool game. But for now, Wild Games. Is that really their name, the name of their studio?
Yeah, when you're one guy making a game, you can pretty much do whatever you want with like naming structures. So if you say, hey, Wild Game Studio, and there's no one to tell you no. Also, there was no one to tell him not to make this game.
I haven't seen this game, but I think I've seen GIFs of it around. Is it that like really weird? Like it looks like Far Cry 3 on meth.
Yes,
yeah,
and also like low poly. Well, not really. I shouldn't say that. But
yes, the polys are nice, but they're like hideously ugly, and the textures look like they came off like a PlayStation 2.
So the game we're talking about is what is the full name of this game, Mark?
It is Day One. / Gary's Incident.
Gary's
so is this a Gary's incident. Mod or
yeah, right. you would think because that would make more sense and probably
which
be more
Gary are we talking about here? There's Gary's Mod. There's Gary Whitta. There's
Gary Gygax.
It's entirely possible the guy who developed the game's name is Gary. Let's yeah. actually, the guy's name is John Getty. Maybe he thought he was like naming it Getty's Incident.
Maybe it's like how they, you know, people who write fan fiction with Mary Sue has just changed like one letter, and that's what he thought he was doing. Like, no one's going to pick up on this.
So, but from what I understand about how this game is done, I understand that we're not going to find out what happens on day two.
Yeah, because it's too glitchy. Like at day two, the game just blue screens.
So Bigger Paul, I think that is his name. Bigger Pal?
Swedish dudes.
Yeah, this Swedish guy. He posts funny videos of basically breaking games on YouTube. And also some amazing Battlefield videos. And he posted up a video of this. I don't know. I saw it like last week sometime, maybe. I don't know when the game must have been around when the game came out. And it is just so broken. Just so very, 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 very broken in the most horrible ways.
Now, here's the interesting thing. It's like, maybe it's because they're like in the EU and like maybe like YouTube is like afraid of them. I don't know. But you would think this would be the one that Wild Studios game. No, is it Wild Studios or Wild Studios Games?
That's for you to decide, Mark.
It's Wild Games Studio.
Okay.
You'd think this would be the one that Wild Games Studio would like take down, because this is far more damaging. This is just goofing on the game in an amazing way as only Burger Pal can do. But the video they actually went after was Total Biscuit.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. So what Mark is talking about is that they requested Total Biscuit to take down his video look at day one Gary's incident.
Right. I mean, they sent Total Biscuit, whatever his real name is. Presumably, it's not actually Total Biscuit. They sent him like a free copy of the game with the understanding that he would do video for it, because that's what he does for a living. This is how he makes his rent. And he posted a highly critical review of it because the game's a buggy piece of shit that failed its Kickstarter. So yeah, and they decided to do.
I didn't even realize until you mentioned it before the cast that it was a Kickstarter game.
It is important to preface that with a failed Kickstarter that raised 37. It's worse than failed Kickstarter. He only needed $50,000, which, okay, so I'm saying only $50,000, like that is an enormous sum of money. However, he raised $37,000, $10,000 of his own money. No one wanted this fucking game to be developed except for Mr. John Gary.
Well, there are other really promising game-looking games that have missed their Kickstarter goal. And, not a knock against, you know, Kickstarters that have failed that, you know, games still come out. I hope games that have failed Kickstarters still manage to come out and maybe do well for one reason or another. It's just...
But the entire, promise of Kickstarter is that the crowd would know. Right? The crowd would know if the game is shit.
With their bucks.
Right.
Yeah. Now, it's kind of one of those things where the litmus test is, what can you tell us about Gary's incident that isn't about how it's bad or buggy?
Well, now you can't, because that's the only conversation we're having. It's
what was it ever about? And was any of that at all worthwhile?
Judging by the video, it's apparently a really awful take on Far Cry, I guess.
But you could just go and buy right now if you wanted. For cheap.
So their side of the story is that they don't care that people criticize the game. It's what bothers them is that the people who criticize it have their videos monetized, and they didn't give permission for that, which is I guess technically true, but maybe not the right reason.
All right, well, that's this whole thing with a lot of people putting out games now, like in their, you know, EULA or whatever, put in a little note saying, hey, we give you full permission to stream and, you know, put videos of our games up, because I forget what law kicked in just in the last year or whatever that caused that.
Well, it appears it's something that needs to be sorted out. And the sad part is we're expecting a bunch of old men sitting in like judges' chambers to figure this out, and there's no way they're going to get it right. But yeah, in a perfect world, this would be clearly a fair use situation.
Yeah. No, that's just a fair point.
But then again, like, you can't, like, if you ever watch Red Letter Media's stuff, the only thing they'll ever show are like just endless clips of the trailers. Now, I don't know if that's because they just don't want to spoil everything, or because that's the only thing they have like legal access to.
I don't think you can like have a whole host like it. Some of those Red Letter Media reviews are pretty long.
Yeah.
I don't think you can show most of that stuff. Like, you can't show most of a movie in your review.
I guess. But I mean, like, what was his episode one review? It was something like an hour long, if I remember correctly. And it wasn't like the same video played again. It wasn't like trailer video. So there's some kind of different law being in effect.
But was he monetizing those videos?
Yeah. I mean, Red Letter Media, well.
Not like I understand, Star Wars videos were before that stuff.
Yeah. And like the way Red Letter Media actually makes its money is they sell actual physical things like
T-shirts, keychains.
Yeah. It's like it's up on YouTube where it's getting ad money.
Also, there are various exceptions that allow you to excerpt media, and it started with books. You'd have to, like, excerpt a passage in order to discuss and criticize it. So that same rule applies to music and movies as well. It's just that there's a point where your entire thing is excerpts and almost no criticism.
Also, we need to make it clear that YouTube isn't like a legal, no man's land. It's a private site.
Yeah.
It's just whatever they decide, you can't really, like, even if they decide to be something that's, like, not within your legal rights, that you kind of agree to that when you sign up and agree to take money from them or their advertisers.
Because it's important to note that, Wild Games Studio is not the only people to do this. It's like other big companies have done this in the past, right. Most notably Nintendo.
YouTube went to a bunch of content providers and said, hey, you can run your own ads here, and then you should get the advertising revenue from that. So a bunch of companies actually did pick up on that and take that offer.
Yeah. And like, if that's going to be the way of things, then guys like Burger Pal, like Total Biscuit, Two Best Friends Play, they're just going to walk away because there's no way to make enough money doing that if they have to share with the big companies actually getting their footage from. That said, like, okay, so the Two Best Friends Play stuff, this is, now I understand it's creative, it is a creative work, we all enjoy watching their stuff, but like the stuff on screen is produced by other people.
Right. It's the reason that like Riff Tracks don't actually send out a movie with all their stuff. They can't sell that, they can only sell their commentary to the
partnering
movie.
Partnering audio, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's easy to see an argument in a future where like that's just going to go away. And it's hard to make the arguments that, okay, just because we find it funny, we find it useful, and like we're on the side of like people like Two Best Friends Play. But if the companies come down and say, listen, this is our creative work, well, I'm not really sure what you can say about that.
Well, I mean, it's not going to end. It's just going to end for people who do it as a job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because these companies don't care as long as you're not monetizing the stuff. Once you start doing that, then they're like, okay, this money actually probably belongs to us because this is our creative work.
Which makes so
which companies are you talking about there?
Like Nintendo and Konami.
Okay.
Because they're ones that have, like, they don't try to shut it down. They just try to make it so it's their ads that play.
Sega apparently has also done something in the past where, like, they took down a bunch of Shining Force 3 videos just so Shining, one of their other terrible Shining games would get the highest views.
Sega straight up shuts that stuff down. Like, they shut it down a bunch of whole Yakuza sites and playthroughs. Not for a particular reason, just because they don't intend to bring the series here anymore, so they really don't want that stuff. Like, they don't want people seeing that stuff and getting incensed that they don't bring the series here anymore.
Wow.
Mm. Of course, now, all that said, like, the reason, like, Sega or Nintendo, Konami are doing it for completely different reasons than why Wild Game Studios has taken down Total Biscuit's review.
I think you've said the name of that studio different every single time.
Because it's a stupid name, and I can't be bothered to give it the respect it deserves. But they did it for entirely different reasons. I mean, they can sit there and say it was because, like, we didn't want it monetized. But there's plenty of other videos out there with that same footage that they didn't take down. Were those
also monetized, though?
They're on YouTube, so...
That, not necessarily. Like, none of our stuff is monetized.
Yeah,
I don't know if Bigger Pal, I don't know if he monetizes his.
Well, it's an exception because it was the most critical one. And the only reason we're having this conversation, like, if he, like, put out a glowing review and then they took it down, no one would notice. The game is shit. Total Biscuit called it shit. And now the only conversation we're having because of this is the video that this studio took down because their game was garbage. And they can no longer control the message.
I'm a little, I don't know, skeptical of anything Total Biscuit says because that guy's not only a huge dick, like a fantastically huge dick. He seems to have like a gigantic persecution complex. Like, if he finds out he's being mentioned in this podcast, he'll probably yell at us over Twitter.
Oh, God.
Yay.
At Nightshirtbeard, at Imran Khan. Yeah. No, wait. Well, Imran Khan, at MAUS Malone.
Like, he does things like, if he word searches his name on Reddit, and if he finds people that are talking bad about him, he'll tweet the Reddit link and tell people to downvote any negative comments till they're hidden, because he's quote-unquote protecting his brand.
I think I hear advertisements for a service that does that on NPR. Protecting your online reputation.
Yeah.
Reputation.com.
So, yeah. Like, that's, I mean, it's easily possible that these people are like, hey, we don't like criticism of our game, we're putting down a notice. It's also fairly possible, I feel, that, like, it was taken down for, like, the reasons they say, and he decided that it's because he was being critical.
And it's probably the most advertising Total Biscuit has had in months. Well, at least since he had his horrible transgender like episode. Actually, I can't remember what he did now. I'm sure it is awful.
He's really popular and he has a pleasant voice, so I mean that's pretty much all you need with LPs. You need to be awake and have a nice
voice. He was on a Will Wheaton runs a show called Tabletop. He gets together with, you know, celebrities and some other people and plays board games. And he was actually Total Biscuit, again, I can't remember his real name, was on an episode of that. I don't remember what they were playing.
He's now Total Biscuit. He's like the Ultimate Warrior. He has changed his name to be that persona.
The YouTuber formerly known as Gary. What if Total Biscuit's real name is actually Gary?
Oh my God.
That's why he took such offense to it.
What?
That's why he took such offense to the game.
Right. Yeah. He's like, this game is representing me.
I never had this incident.
This is only day one of indicative. This lawsuit.
Is it just me, or does it sound like this is a story about that time Gary crapped his pants?
Oh,
Gary's
man.
Incident.
Gary. Oh, that Gary.
Gary's had another incident out in public.
He had to fight an entire jungle Mayan civilization just to end up pooping his pants.
Or the guy is schizophrenic and he's having an incident, but he's really just like in a suburban town somewhere.
Right. I wonder if anyone's actually played this game to completion. What if there is some giant bombshell that drops at the end like that?
Bombshell. There's no day two.
Right.
Day two is DLC.
Right. Like naming something one and then just never making anything else. Or naming something two and then everyone starts looking for the first one and it doesn't exist.
Well, it's like History of the World Part 1. It's like, I'm still waiting for History of the World Part 2. Mel Brooks.
Spaceballs 2, The Search for More Money.
The Search for the First Spaceballs. Welcome to the Space Jam.
I have no idea what you guys have been talking about for the last, like, 2 minutes.
Are you sure it's been 2 minutes? I think Imran's having an incident.
I'm just kind of disturbed that Imran has no deep knowledge of the Mel Brooks back catalog.
I know what Spaceballs is. I've seen Spaceballs, but it's like, all of that stuff just...
Are you implying you've never seen History of the World Part 1?
I've never seen History of the World Part 1.
You gotta fix that.
I don't think I have either, actually. We didn't have movies in Africa.
See Jews in space!
That's actually a bit from History of the World Part 1. We're not being awful. That's a bit from, He can do that because Mel Brooks is...
in space, flying around protecting the Hebrew race.
They had a big spaceship shaped like the Star of David. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Mel Brooks should make a video game.
He shouldn't.
I'm nearly positive this happens at some point in like the Sega CD era, along with the Penn and Teller video game. I'm sure this exists in some fashion.
Did Penn and Teller make a video game?
They made Desert Bus.
Desert Bus is one level in their video game that was never released because it was terrible. Because the whole thing was a mockery of the idea of video games.
Yep.
Right. I always hear about Desert Bus, but I don't know that I've ever seen it in action. Well,
I watched a marathon stream.
I know there's the marathon that they do every year. I should say, quote unquote, action. Yep.
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 Okay.
I guess that's a segue.
You could put in break music there or something.
Did you see that one of the White House press people actually tweeted the N-word by mistake?
Whoa! How do you do that?
He was trying to type bigger,
but B and N are right next to each other. And he just didn't catch it by the time he hit N. Like, it's really clear from the context that he meant to type bigger.
I like that the whatever program they're using, the autocorrect, didn't fix this automatically.
Yeah, there's got to be like a PR. Like, PR companies have to develop their own software for Twitter at this point. It's just like, hold on, wait a second. You don't want to send that tweet. That should be a service. We should make that software. We'll call it, you don't want to send that tweet.
Right.
We can sell it to enterprises for millions.
Yeah.
Our logo could be that cat that gets up and touches that person's arm and the you need to stop posting caption comes
up. It's just an app for Twitter. You click tweet and it's like, hey, we noticed the word.
Are you sure you want to send that tweet?
Yeah.
It will set it up so that you can set up multiple accounts and say, this one's for work. And this one's for home, and it never ever lets you post the one from work.
Nope.
Yeah.
Nightjar would do that.
A lot of people do that. That's usually how companies have big Twitter problems. Somebody sets up Twitter to handle a Twitter app to handle multiple accounts so that their phone can use it for their personal stuff and they can also check in on work. And then they tweet to the wrong account.
So to tie it into video games, I think Rise's presence on Twitter has been one of the most hilarious things.
Oh, man. Are we back?
Yes.
Let's come back and talk about Rise.
Yeah, because that's a thing. What happened?
Because it hasn't been released yet.
Well, no. All right, don't go on the thing again, Mark. No, but no, something happened with Rise just this past week, didn't it?
Was tweeting Rise Facts, hashtag Rise Facts.
That's right.
And they mentioned that the Rise development team, we served 11,500 dinners during crunch time. And it's like, wow. I think they expected to be like, wow, that's such a huge number. Yeah. Aren't you guys impressed by how hard we're working on Rise? But then everyone's like, crunch is really fucking terrible.
Yeah.
And then the entire
jokes about it.
Yeah, the entire development community just completely backlashed.
Yeah, everybody said, how about you let them go home and eat dinner with their families?
Right, people
instead
started
making this
it.
Horrible video game that nobody's ever going to like, ever.
People started doing, Rise Facts, a development team that eats well. I forget exactly what it was, but it was, I'm going to look some up now while I'm at it. And
there were some other, smaller developers who had independent games who were bragging about, during the course of our development, we served zero meals to our employees and they all got to go home and spend time with their families.
Which is also just a great PR tool for that.
Yeah.
Rise is not something you serve with curry. Rise Facts.
Yeah. So, it's one of those things that's happened for so long that everybody's just kind of taken it, as a given. Crunch is really, really shitty.
Yep. I mean, it used to be a thing where we got behind schedule and this is what we need to do. Now it's sort of planned in for development schedules. Everyone's thinking this is going to be the time that we're all going to have to work really hard.
Yeah, but then here's the ridiculous thing. They all miss their deadlines anyway.
Yeah.
Well,
and then they don't get
a number of games miss their deadlines anyway.
Not if you're Ubisoft. Oh.
Yeah.
So they plan for crunch. They plan to have crunch at the end of the development cycle where everybody's got to stay for 16 hours a day to get this thing done before deadline. Then they don't make the deadline. Plan for crunch.
It's just we don't really want to talk about the fact that video game development and basically everything tied into it is a really scummy business. It's abusive toward its employees. It crushes any creative spirit whatsoever. And it's basically just there to produce... Well, it's there for Activision to produce yearly revisions of the worst games imaginable.
Well, I mean, some of the outlash on Twitter, there's an article on Gamma Sutra that collected a bunch of tweets and stuff, saying, hey, crunch is horrible. I've been there and I've felt the effects. It's just not worth it. Months of missing their kids growing up, mm-hmm. and Clay, the developers of Don't Starve, and Mark of the Ninja, and the upcoming Incognita. They said by the time Don't Starve ships for PlayStation 4, our team will have had 700 dinners at home with their families.
Yeah.
Did you know Clay made Mark of the Ninja? Hashtag Rise Facts.
Hashtag Rise Facts. I can't even say it right. Hashtag Chuck Norris. I got nothing.
I'd say we should just keep calling it Reese.
Reese?
R-I-C-E. Reese.
Great. Yeah. Now I'm going to have to go buy Reese's Pieces after this. Thanks,
Matt. You'll call him John Rhys Davies.
I've said this before, but it's like, how stupid is it? Like, why is it a thing that Crytek does? Just puts Y's in the place of I's. Because that's not really a good gimmick.
Right. I know that's their thing, but I don't know that that's the thing you want to be known for.
Listen, if it was good enough for Rhino when he went from ECW to WWF and lasted for like 3 weeks before.
R-H-Y-N-O.
Yeah. He went to the WWE and they had to make money off of that. And they couldn't trademark the name Rhino because rhinos still existed.
It's a wino. It made him a drunk.
That would have been a much better idea. But, you
or
know,
Dino. Dino makes way more sense.
Dino with a Y.
It should have come out in a Barney costume and like scissor kicks off the
top. That's a different wrestler. That's a Dragon.
That's awesome. Great.
Dragon. We should just start doing that with baseball games. Like, I'm going to talk about Incognita, except the I has been replaced with a Y. That doesn't work. Incognita. The Black Rhino of Guns. Brian Belay. Oh, no.
Or we could call Rise by its other name. It's called God of War 5.
What? Why
it doesn't look like God of War. It looks like shitty.
There was a point in time where it looked like God of War. This is what Microsoft is doing now. They're
God of War has way more spectacle.
Yeah, I understand that, but that is what they're making. Like, they made this specifically to have something to kill God of War because it looks like it's God 2013. Of War
because there aren't a lot of games in that setting. Even though I guess is God of War Roman or Greek?
It's stupid.
Greek, I think.
Greek. But at any rate, it looks a lot more like that game that Harold Lee was working on before it got canceled.
Troy?
Yeah. Just because it's more focused around an army and less focused around like a demigod.
Well, I mean, it's a thing Microsoft pulls out at every launch. It's the look at how many people we have on screen thing. Because this generation it's Rise, last generation it was 99 Knights, the generation before it was Halo, wasn't it? Like, that was their look how many people we have. They all have AI thing.
But we've been playing Dynasty Warriors since the PS2. I don't know why they think that's still impressive.
I think it's they're mainly trying to push the AI thing, but also it's a nice visual.
And well, speaking
of playing things since 92, did you guys see that that PlayStation ad where it goes through like the PlayStation 1, PlayStation 2?
Oh, the PlayStation Memories thing?
Yeah, PlayStation Memories. Yeah, oh man, hashtags. God. We need more hashtags, apparently.
Hashtag.
I thought that was pretty. I liked it. It was a fun little nostalgic video, I guess.
I haven't seen it. Talk us through this video.
It's set up as a single shot, long take. It's just the camera's kind of rotating around this room, and you see the same people through the years going through.
Here's my question: Is the Pocket Station mentioned? Did they bring it the Pocket Station?
No.
Then it's a lie. Then they're hiding the past, and I refuse to accept it.
Anyway, so pans by the TV, and you see the PlayStation 1, and friends sit down. It's like, oh, let's play some Tekken, and they play Tekken, and then it swings around. The guy comes back with like a girlfriend, and then he's in his room with friends, and it's the PlayStation 2, and they're playing something else, and it was nice. I enjoyed it. It's not the most offensive thing that Sony's done.
Well, we're at the point now where like Sony rightfully has a claim on nostalgia.
Yeah. Well, they're four so consoles in. It's like, at this point in time, Nintendo was up to, well, I guess, further than the GameCube, because if you just take years into account, like, what, 1997 was released?
It'd be about 15 years, and GameCube was released in 2001?
Mm-hmm. PlayStation 4 Bloody War, I believe.
So we're looking at, it was 95 or 96 for the PlayStation 1.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, no, actually, if you have a Japanese release date, we're talking about 1994. It was released in September in 1995 in America. So, further along than that.
You know, the weirdest thing, though, is we're still going to be buying games on discs.
Sure, because you have people in Kansas who can't afford to.
Well, they're very different discs, though.
That's true.
Yeah, they're not black anymore, which I think to be the most depressing thing about it.
Oh, God, I had to put a PlayStation 2, or I had to put a PlayStation 1 disc in. Oh, duh, Gran Turismo. And I was looking at the black disc, I'm like, I don't even know if this will read.
Right, look at this thing.
What the hell's going on with this? But when you, I guess, probably like get this into the Gran Turismo talk, but back in the day when you first saw that PlayStation 1 disc and it was just pure black on the back end of it, you're thinking, this is magic. How can this possibly work? This is the most amazing high-tech thing in the world.
I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I thought it was ugly and cheap looking.
Well, well, you're a cynic, Dick. I believed in the magic.
I thought it was badass.
Yeah. It was black magic. Okay.
I thought the blue PS2 CDs, that was just kind of stupid. And no game was really feasible on CD on the PS2
anyway. I thought
it was
a neat little touch, I thought.
There was a couple of PS2 CD games.
Yeah, there was a handful. But that was really quickly phased out.
Well, it was mostly games that were upported from the PS1.
Right.
Yeah. It's kind of, at the time, it seemed like a neat thing to do. And then they pretty quickly realized that the price of making a DVD had come down to the point where it wasn't really any benefit to go with a CD.
So what are the chances, and how would that even work, any of some sort of good old game service for consoles?
I think that the licensing would be all
like
broken.
What do you mean, good old, like something that reprints old games, or like old games being offered on the services?
Or spreads them digitally. I know that some of the console makers on their stores, they have some old games up for buying and whatnot.
You could feasibly do it now with the NES, because Nintendo basically lost the rights to the internals of that thing, and they can't really stop emulation of it anymore.
They never had the rights to the internals. Remember, systems like the NES and the SNES don't have an operating system.
Okay.
They just have hardware. And if you can... They didn't lose the rights. They lost the court battle where a judge basically decided, if you make a machine that works the same way as another machine, unless there's some patented process, which, basic math is not a patented process, there's no copyright claim.
So... if you were going to do a good old games thing for the NES, you would have, instead of having a service that created the ROMs, you would have to have something that had access to the carts, because otherwise you just run cool ROMs and you just have ROMs for download.
I mean, I guess, I don't know. I guess I'm saying is that I feel like console manufacturers and the I really missed the boat on putting up a lot of these games on, the eShop for, Nintendo and stuff. It's just I don't know.
No, you're entirely right, because, I mean, my entire argument about this whole thing has been, companies like Nintendo and Sega and Capcom and Konami, it's not just so much that they have rights to these games and they're not using the back catalog. They are stewards of our culture. We have entire generations who grew up on these games, so these games were part of their lives. Yeah. And you have a company like Capcom, who's just completely ignored that back catalog and doesn't care about making money off of it. And they have been terrible stewards of that culture.
The other thing that boggles me is I feel like they would make good money probably with.
I feel
investment.
Like you guys are overestimating how many people are actually interested in that old stuff.
I think
our age maybe, but people our age also there's very little compunction about just getting it super free.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's, but if there was an option, I can't even think of a game because
if there was a paid service for Nintendo, like PSN Plus or Xbox Live Gold, and that gave you Netflix-like access to the NES back catalog, that would be awesome.
But they're never going to do that because
they're not going to do that
because that devalues their old stuff,
which means there's value to it.
Well, not only that, it's $20,000 a pop to get these things ESRB rated.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's one of the reasons.
Yeah. I think it could be there. I mean...
Yeah. And Nintendo also does it a little bit to themselves because they have this weird internal quality assurance process that, it costs a lot of money to staff that quality assurance center. So, getting a game through quality assurance at Nintendo's, as they're finding out, kind of one of their stumbling blocks.
And yet Friday the 13th was still released.
Friday the 13th was fine.
No, it wasn't.
No.
Totally. That game had a lot of interesting things about it.
Yeah, interesting. Well, yep. It had a
Friday
lot of interesting things about it.
Is another example of how much the NES era relied on you reading the instruction manual.
Mm. Yeah.
There are a lot of games that just don't make any sense anymore if you don't have the physical manual next to you.
Or if you rented the game, you were completely boned.
Huh? Yeah, I had that problem when I rented Metal Gear Solid, because it asked you to look at the back of the box for something.
You see, I think at that point you can sue the company for fraud. Like, you should be able to go to Blockbuster and say, listen, this thing is not actually usable without the box that you have denied me.
I think there's, like, a way around that, way to find the codec without, in today's internet culture, that doesn't matter at all.
Yeah, well, back in the day, you would have went to Usenet. It was like rec.sports.videogames, and there it was.
Man, that was like 1998.
Yeah. Talk to your friend the next day in school. A guy who actually owns the games.
Yeah.
You give him $5. Say, hey, kind of look at the box, back of your box. Damn it.
Yep.
So since we were talking about PS1 discs, do you want to seg into Gran Turismo?
I think that's a grand idea, Matt.
Oh.
I think we should have a tour. I can't do anything else.
But yeah. That would be witty if grand didn't actually mean grand, but it does. So it's not witty.
Yep.
Gran Turismo just means grand touring.
Matt, as a Gran Turismo aficionado, how did Gran Turismo get its start? Was it the first game to have that many cars car games.
Before those games, unless you had a game with an exclusive license, like a Ferrari game or a Lamborghini game or Porsche, I think at the time also had an exclusive license, then you didn't see real cars in games.
Well, you could, there was stuff like the Need for Speed game for like the 3DO and the PlayStation. I remember that being the first one that really had like a lot of different cars in it.
Lot of different cars at the time was like a dozen.
Maybe. Yeah.
And they all, like Need for, yeah, the first game I can think of that had a bunch of different licensed cars was Need for Speed on the 3DO.
Yeah.
Which was awful.
Yeah, it was awful, but it was the first thing we had. Like,
it was awfully amazing back then, though.
We dealt with it.
You flip the car over and there's like stuff on the bottom of the car and you're like, oh my god, look at the detail. And you do it now, just like a really crappy texture.
God, I can't remember. I think it was a Need for Speed game. I remember just physics. At some point, car flew up in the air and it spun just like on its nose for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of the more wacky ones. Like there were actually jumps and stuff. It might not even have been Need for Speed.
Yeah, it should
be
a
more modern game.
Yeah. It should be noted that these are things that would not happen in Gran Turismo.
Yeah, Gran Turismo.
I don't know. There was that you could modify the the S2000.
No,
and was this Gran Turismo 1 or 2?
It wouldn't matter.
Flip a car over in Gran Turismo until 5.
You could basically modify it so like the front end would take off and your car would do a backflip, I think.
But
right?
At some point, when your car reaches more than 45 degrees from the road surface, it just stops rotating. Like it's like an invisible outrigger,
right?
Your car can't flip over in the first
four games. Yeah. No, so I don't know who decided, hey, let's make a game with a fuck ton of cars.
Well, it was car. Yeah, that would be. Yeah.
Yeah, Kazunori Yamauchi.
Yeah.
The one thing with Gran Turismo is it's this one guy's crazy car porn vision.
Yeah.
Which is why he gets all the, what's the word? Leverage or all the rope he needs, because
the reason he gets all the rope he needs is that he sells millions, tens of millions of copies of all these games.
Gran Turismo is one of the most successful series of all time.
How does it compare to Forza?
Sales wise,
sales wise, yeah,
it's probably outsells Forza 2-1.
Okay,
yeah, I have no idea what Forza sells, but Gran Turismo 5 and 5 Prologue are the number one and number two PS2 games. Or PS3 games. And Gran Turismo 1 sold something in the order of like 60 million copies.
I don't think it was 60 million would
no,
be
not
insane.
60, 40 million. 40 million. I remember it's like on par with Super Mario Brothers for the NES.
I remember this being one of the very early games I was just enormously hyped for back in the day of just video game magazines when it was showing off what video game editors, magazine editors were talking about this in hushed tones and just something we had never seen before. And we really never did see this thing before in console games. It's just dedicated, super,
Well, realistic. It wasn't cartoon physics.
Yeah.
Like, right. Everything else before that was cartoon physics, except for Need for Speed, which was just kind of BS.
Whatever physics, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, like, games like Ridge Racer would randomly decide to work on its physics like every other game. Like, Ridge Racer 3 would have physics for hills. Like, you go up, down.
I think it was a Ridge Racer game that I'm thinking of. It had, like, crazy future... One of the first games where you got chased by cops in a racing game.
That would be Need for Speed Hot Pursuit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was pretty early. When was the first Hot Pursuit game?
97?
Oh, okay. Maybe it was that.
Huh. Yeah, they roll out the Hot Pursuit names occasionally. Like, they've been doing that a lot now. Like, they just take Need for Speed games, just name them the same things in old Need for Speed game. Like, there was a sequel or anything.
That's why I was
like...
confused about that. I thought, like, Hot Pursuit was a recent thing, but I guess there were two iterations.
No, the first Hot Pursuit was Need for Speed 3, and it was, like, way back in the 90s.
Yeah, that must have been it.
I'm pretty sure there's been, like, two or three Most Wanteds, all just named straight up Most Wanted.
Yeah, here's an idea of how old that Need for Speed game is. It was the pack-in with Voodoo 2 cards.
And it should be noted that it was called Car and Driver Magazine. No, Road and Track
Road
Magazine.
And Track.
Yeah, the Need for Speed. Because at that point in time, the Road and Track Magazine license was way bigger than the Need for Speed license.
Yeah.
So I never really had much interest in like serious racing games. But my first introduction was with Gran Turismo 1 because my brother was a big car buff. And so he picked it up. And I had some fun doing the license tests and kind of switching off on some of the endurance race. Wait, did they have endurance races in the?
They had
not in
two
one.
Endurance races in Gran Turismo 1 on Route 11 and.
Because I remember finding
Grand
some
Valley.
Looking for some hot tips on the internet for Gran Turismo 1, and there was one that you could, you know, like rubber band the analog sticks together. That must have been for the PS2 though, I think.
Yeah, I don't think Gran Turismo 1 supported.
No, analog. But anyway, so
they supported
that,
analog.
But,
there was a huge dead zone. It didn't work very well.
Okay, yeah. But so there was that, and then I guess when I picked up the PlayStation 2, what was the packing game? Was that Gran Turismo 2 or 3?
There's several three. Different ones, but yeah. 3 would have been
okay,
the big
yeah,
one.
Yeah, I think it must have been 3.
3 is also the best-selling PS2 game, like, period.
Mm-hmm. It's like, all because it was a pack-in for a long time.
Yeah, but
right, that's
it outsold GTA.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy to think.
Yeah, it outsells GTA. Like, everybody talks about GTA being like this world-ending thing. Gran Turismo quietly outsells it, pretty steadily.
Well, like, yeah, in Gran Turismo, like, it isn't a thing where like it sells for a month and then it dies. Like, a Gran Turismo game sells a system for years and years and years and years. Mm-hmm.
Like, I've seen people so weirdly dedicated to Gran Turismo that they'll have $3,000 or $4,000 setups. Just for that one game.
And I wonder about, because I was playing these Gran Turismo 1, trying to get the license test. I can't remember ever getting, like, the golds using, like, the gamepad, because I was using the first DualShock for it. I can't imagine it's possible to get all golds on the license without the wheel.
I did it
with the wheel. You need the wheel because the wheel's the only way to get analog gas and brake in that game.
Okay. Right. Well, what about the... at the same time, what you're saying, because you can get like analog gas and brake on the right stick.
You could map it. I guess that would work.
That's what I was.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a pain in the ass, but that's what I did like this time, and I always, well, up until like the DualShock 3, because now you actually have
analog
control.
Triggers.
Yeah, even if they are an enormous pain. But yeah, I played Gran Turismo for all the PlayStation 2 games. Put the gas and brake on all the racing games on that stick. And it's a horrible experience, but I can't do a racing game without analog throttle.
Yeah. I mean, my brother, he's like the kind of guy that we, you know, do like manual shifting and stuff. And I just wanted to race cars. So I don't think I ever messed with manual shifting.
Yeah. As much as I love the accuracy, Forza has a clutch button so that you can push in the clutch to shift gears. And that's more than I want to do with my hands.
Yeah, that's like, a step too far. And you don't even need to mess with that stuff to get like good times in the Forza games.
No, it's all because they want to be able, like, they have to support that for the people who are going to buy the $3,000 setup. Right. But then they give you the ability to map it to the controller, and it's like, I don't need that. Right. No one really needs that. No
this
one cares.
Is stupid. This is crazy.
No, but I, I had a lot of fun playing Grand Theft Auto 1 because, like with other crazy racing games like Burnout and stuff, you kind of feel like you're invincible. And there's a marginal sense of tension, you know, when you're racing and but it's mostly because you're flying so goddamn fast through these city streets and you don't know if you're going to twitch and you're going to hit a building and stuff. But with this, because, you know, it did kind of bill itself as one of the first realistic car physics racing games, it's a little more intense almost just because. Yeah. You feel like, oh god, I'm chugging along, I'm moving. Yeah.
Why is this car so slow? Oh god,
I love that your first race that you race in that game is actually like you think you're on the ragged edge. You look at the speedometer and you're going 60 around the corner.
The shittiest car ever.
Around the shittiest little track ever. It's like if you look at the map of it, it is the dinkiest little track in the world. But you're zipping along in like a Japanese K car, and it feels like you're doing like 20 miles an hour.
Yes.
So this is my first Gran Turismo game.
Really?
Period.
Wow.
Yeah, that's playing this week.
Now, have you ever played like any of the Forza games, or it's just like your first like console simulation racer?
I briefly played Forza Horizon.
Okay, not the same thing at all. Okay,
so not the simulators.
That is an arcade game. Okay.
So the very first thing I tried to do in this game is, once I stopped spinning out, was getting up to another car and just bashing it.
Nope, don't do that. Nope, don't do that.
And like neither of the cars actually like move that much or got any damage.
Yeah.
So I was like, huh.
You just lose a ton of speed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then even then the fourth or fifth time I finally tried to get the hang of this, I was like, okay, I'm racing really well. And even though I made like no mistakes, I took all the corners really well, I still got like fourth place.
Yep.
Yep.
That's the thing about the Gran Turismo games, especially one, you have to put in the work. Like you have to qualify for the races. I don't think this is something that ever came up in like Gran Turismo 1. But if you want to get a good placement, if you want to do well, you have to sit there and do practice laps. You have to know what your car can do on that track with that setup, because if you mess with your setup, it's going to handle completely differently.
Handle corners.
Yeah, if you don't put in the work, you are going to fail in this game every single time, and you're going to get down to fourth or fifth place, and you're going to struggle to get the fourth or fifth place.
So if I may provide an analogy, Gran Turismo is to racing games as Street Fighter is to fighting games?
Something like that. Yeah, it's highly technical. Yeah. I would, you know, you hate to keep
it's
saying
less flashy.
It's, yeah, it's less flashy.
And it's less of a game that you can really jump into. Like Street Fighter, for all of its technicality, you could still take somebody who's new to fighting games and they can jump in and enjoy it.
Yeah, they can just smash buttons and have fun doing something.
Yeah, they might not beat anybody, but they'll still have fun. And Gran Turismo maybe is not so beginner-friendly.
Mm-mm.
Which is the amazing thing to me about how many copies this thing sells. You have to be dedicated in order to get anything good out of Gran Turismo. You're not going to have fun the first little while you play it, because it's going to beat the crap out of you. Like, I don't think until 5, does 5 even have like the driving lanes?
Like 5 does have driving lanes, and they're enabled by default.
Okay, that's good at least. But like through the vast majority of this game's history, it did not have driving lanes, lines rather.
So I have a random question now that I think about it. Do all the Gran Turismo games still use the Japanese button placement, like the O freaking firm X to cancel? Yeah.
They did through the PS2.
No, in the PS2 it was circle and X to select and triangle to go back.
Yeah.
That always kind of tickled me when I played games like that. I was like, "Ooh, I know what I'm doing in a Japanese game."
Yeah. I always loved that in the Metal Gear Solid games for the PS1. It's like, it's Japanese.
Right, I felt special.
I'm Okutu.
What?
Okutu.
I don't think that means what you think it means.
Probably not.
Otaku?
Maybe.
Okay.
Kotaku?
Shut up.
So
Gran Turismo.
My conspiracy theory, secret conspiracy theory for why Gran Turismo was a takeoff hit when it first came out.
Mm-hmm.
That's Dad's game.
Yeah.
Like there's a PS1 in the living room. The kid has a dozen games for it. Dad gets the one game.
Yeah. Dad
the
gets
one
his game.
Kind of adult game that's not so flashy. It's not all like heavy metal solos all the time. It's
though I did notice that this game had garbage in it.
It did.
Yes.
Which tickled me because I was like, haha, 90s.
Yeah.
cherry lips.
I think Gran Turismo 2 had a legitimately great soundtrack. It had the Cardigans.
Was that the one with Lenny Kravitz? Was that two?
Yes.
No, I think that was 3. No?
But yeah, 3 had Are You Gonna Go My Way as intro music.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of. That's a fun intro.
Gran Turismo 4 had a great intro. It was Panama. Yeah. Terrific.
Panama. Oh, right. Yes.
But yeah, these games are really, like, even the Gran Turismo 1, you can tell at the time that was ridiculously graphically impressive because no other racing game looked like that.
They've always had super polished menu systems.
But here's the neat thing about Gran Turismo 1, and you've seen enough games that you can see these things now. There's no lighting in that game.
Yeah.
Like, nothing in that game is lit in real time.
I'm trying to think of PS1 games that did have lighting.
Just about all of them. That was one of the PS1's big selling points over the Saturn. Like, it could handle multiple colored light sources, and the Saturn had a hard time with colored lights.
I feel like, I'm trying to remember them, and Vagrant Story is the only one that really comes to mind.
Now, now this is different from like when you have it in the showroom and like the lights are like playing over the paint, because that seemed fake.
Half-Life came out on PlayStation 2.
Quake had lights, obviously. Yeah.
Right, Quake had a PS1 release.
But it had light maps for the environment, but then your weapons created lights, and all the characters were lit. But I mean, like, even the cars in Gran Turismo aren't really lit. Like, they just kind of assume a constant overhead sun that gets applied as a constant value across the entire car, and then there's a reflection map on top of it.
So is that just a processing thing, or like they had to do that to keep up the rest of the stuff?
Yeah, it makes it faster. You can put more stuff on the screen because you don't have to calculate any lighting.
And at the end of the day, they could still only put six cars on the screen.
Like more sets of 2D audience members.
Yeah.
I know that's a weird...
just like random colored noise in some of the parts of the game now.
That's a weird thing, like, every even new Gran Turismo 6 shots, I see that and I'm like, oh, those audience members are the same two people repeated over and over again. Which I can understand, like, you don't want to spend too much time or resources on that sort of thing, but it's just a funny thing that, like, it hasn't changed that much.
But if it's that you notice it now, so try and do a little bit better job.
There's a really good reason for that in the modern Gran Turismo games, is because they use a technique called imposters, where you actually render the audience members to a bunch of back buffers and then repeat them on the screen a few times. Which works well enough when the crowd is very far away and you're in the car. But then a replay comes along and it just completely shatters the effect.
I think my favorite part of any Gran Turismo game is when you can finally get up to the actual race cars. My favorite moment of any Gran Turismo was when I took my Honda CRX, because that was the first car I ever bought in a Gran Turismo game, and got it to the racing spec.
Yeah, I missed that about Gran Turismo 1. You could take any car in the game and apply a racing modification to it.
Yeah. Now, chances are that car is going to get destroyed, because there's no way a CRX should be a racing car. But it looks badass. Every single time, it looks just freaking sweet. Like, I got the Miata this time, and like the racing Miata setup is just the most beautiful thing I've ever seen, but I love the Miata anyway.
Yes. So I know it seems like a really silly thing, but one of the things that kind of made an impact the first time you play that game is that there are real sponsorships on things. Right. Like Castrol.
Yeah.
Motor oil is actually on things. And like other names you would recognize as like racing equipment suppliers, or other names you would see from billboards watching racing on TV, they're like actually there on the track.
Yeah, it gives that sense of immersion. It felt like this game felt like looking through a car magazine back when I was young. Yeah. It felt like flipping through a copy of Car and Driver magazine.
And you just get the impression that, like, you aren't racing through a fictionalized version of Tokyo. You're kind of racing through how you would actually lay a course out.
Yeah.
Like, there are actual, like, bollards blocking the walls and fences to prevent cars from flipping out into the audience. And, like, it was clearly designed by somebody who actually cares about racing.
It's a work of obvious love. Now, the tracks in this, they didn't have any real tracks in this version, did they?
Nope.
Because I remember, like, GT2, they actually brought, like, Laguna Seca and a couple other real tracks in.
Yeah. Laguna Seca and I think Suzuka were the first two. I'll be honest, I barely played Gran Turismo 2 at all. I didn't have a PlayStation when it came out. I had lost mine.
Oh, wow.
So is there an end state for these games? I don't know that I've ever played enough of a Gran Turismo game to quote-unquote beat it.
There's not an end state. You could always play past the ending.
Right.
Yeah. But you get a credit and video sequence when you finish the Gran Turismo World Cup.
Ah, okay.
Is that like R3 or R1 or something later on? Or which classification is that?
In the first Gran Turismo, there are four cup series.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are specialty races. Once you finish the four cup series, then you've technically finished the game.
Finish the game, okay.
But in basically all of them, the one series you have to finish is the Gran Turismo World Championship. And when you finish that, you have officially beat the game.
Yeah, but which racing series is? Because there's like the R1, 2, and 3.
What?
Okay.
You're
so like
Forza.
I am? I thought there was the
Forza. Forza is the game that
amateur move,
has
amateur
classifications
move.
For cars that are like R1 and R2.
It's been like 5 years since I played GT4. You have to give me a little bit of a break.
No, it's okay.
That's one of the weird things about Gran Turismo. It doesn't actually give car classifications, but Gran Turismo 5 uses what are called performance points,
mm-hmm.
which are it's based on some internal calculation it's doing, and certain things count towards your score and certain things don't, and
but you can still like put stupidly overpowered cars wherever you want, right?
Sort of. Yeah. As long as you don't go over the limit.
Well, that's what kind of broke Gran Turismo 2 for me. I loved everything about Gran Turismo 2 except for the fact that there was no restrictions on what car you could bring into what class. So like there was like this the station wagon class, for instance. And if like you were just getting tired of having your ass handed to you by like these Volvo station wagons, you just get your Skyline with 900 horsepower and take it out there. And it completely destroyed the purpose of having this realistic racing game because you had a god car destroying everything.
Yeah, Gran Turismo 5 solves that first by introducing performance points limits, which means that you're going to hit a certain power to weight ratio that you're just not going to be able to bring that car in without first putting an engine limiter on it.
Okay.
But then also there's, you know, the type of car, obviously. So like you can't take something other than a station wagon into the station wagon class.
Okay.
And then they also limit the grippiness of your tires.
Oh, okay. No, because I played through like 4. I skipped 3. Was the Skyline always the hero car of this game? Because that was the one thing that always frustrated about me about the Gran Turismo games versus the Forza games. It's like there are 20 different fucking Skylines in every one of these games, while Forza had like a wide array of cars.
The Skyline isn't meant to be a hero car. It's just mm-hmm. that it's insanely popular in Japan.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's one of the only Japanese cars with a really long racing lineage. Like there are
it's
a couple
the 60s, basically.
Yeah. So like the Mazda Miatas have a long racing lineage, but it's a lower class, you know.
Or like
lower
the
RX-7,
power. But like Mazda never created the RX series throughout its entire history.
Yeah, the RX-7 is a really good car and a decent racer, but it didn't last for like 40 years like the Skylines did.
You know, like Toyota and the Supras, they only like beautiful cars, but they only made them for a few years.
Yeah, and then things got worse in GT5 because the Skyline became the Nissan GTR.
Oh, wow.
And, the GTR is the like new version of the Skyline. They just dropped the Skyline name. And they dropped the Skyline name because they don't make a normal version of it. They only make the GTR version now.
Okay, interesting.
And Kaz Yamauchi, the guy who's the executive producer for Gran Turismo, races a GTR in the 24 Hours of Nürburgring every year. So he's kind of obsessed with it.
Right. Which always disappointed me because I was a fan of the Subaru WRX, and they were just never represented very well in these games.
Well, that's the god car in Gran Turismo 1.
Yeah.
You get a racing modification and soup it all the way up. You can take on anything.
Well, there's a secret like broken car in Gran Turismo 1 is the Mitsubishi FTO, not the GTO, which you think would be like way faster, but the FTO, which is like super light. Like it, there's this, once you get that thing modified, there's absolutely nothing that can stop you.
Yeah. So I love that the biggest problem with the original Gran Turismo is that there's no acknowledgement of the fact that if you had built a car like this in real life, it would just shred the drivetrain.
Yeah.
Like I put 900 horsepower in my car, you hit the gas and like the drive shaft should fly out of the like passenger seat.
Everything else is super realistic except for this.
Yeah, there's no damage, so you can't really tear your bearings off. Can't blow up your transmission by pumping too much power through it.
Now, the no damage thing is actually kind of interesting. Probably just Matt and myself, so the rest of you guys. But
talk amongst yourselves.
Yeah. So, like, throughout the entire Gran Turismo series, the biggest complaint was, like, there was no damage. And whether it was, like, a limitation of, like, the engine or just the manufacturers refused to let them damage the cars... Like, they were tanks. And, like, once you figured out how to corner in any of the Gran Turismo games, you were just bouncing off the AI cars and using
them as the other cars as buffers,
Yeah, and, like, you could completely destroy the AI doing this. Now, Forza comes out. Well, like, there was an intermediary step. Anyway, there was Sega GT, which came out, and it also didn't do, like, physical damage. But, like, you could destroy the car in this meta way, and
like would lose different parts of your car had hit points.
Yeah, and it was stupid because it was just represented by, like, a UI thing.
Yeah, there's a little UI thing that shows the parts of your car, and they turn red when they're damaged. Yeah.
Nice.
But, like,
I'm thinking of the MMO Auto Assault.
I really wonder if I played that. Yeah.
Remembers it.
I remember it. I remember learning about it after it was actually canceled.
It was okay, but anyways, go on.
But Forza comes out, and it does actual damage. It does physical damage. You could turn it off because people actually didn't like this. I kept it on because I'm insane, but that was the big difference. And like people, the lines were drawn basically between Gran Turismo and Forza. Based on this damage concept, which I suppose they fixed in 5, it actually brings in damage?
Not really.
Because they're still using like the 4 cars to an extent.
No, you can have damage. You can have it be cosmetic only, or you can have it be actual damage, but you've got to actually turn it on.
Okay.
And it's per race. So the races you have to complete to finish the game, it's not part of that. But if you wanted to set up an online race between you and your friends, you could turn that on in the lobby.
So it basically doesn't exist still.
It's more or less just an online option.
Okay.
Because even though it's totally possible for them to do it in-game, they never really did.
So had they said if this was like addressed in 6, is it actually going to have damage? Or
I honestly don't know. They haven't released a ton of details about... Well, they've released details. They released the car list and the track list. Mm-hmm. But I honestly don't know. Mostly they've been hyping up their better tire modeling and suspension modeling and their better car models.
Because it's going to be all new car models, not still using stuff from the PS2, hopefully.
Or the PS3. They've completely changed the way that they model cars.
Okay.
Which is... fucking nuts. And anybody else would have been told that they can't have the resources, it's just too expensive. But you know, when your game is selling consoles, you can just write the checks.
Yeah, as we mentioned at the beginning.
Well, it should be noted that that's kind of what they had to do in GT5, because a sizable percentage of the GT5 cars are GT4 cars that were up-rezzed because they took for fucking ever to get GT5 out.
So, Imran.
Oh, God, am I still here?
You're still here.
Are you still here? Are you still alive? But this being your first Gran Turismo, what did you think?
I don't like simulation racers.
Okay.
Like, as far as simulation racers go, I'm pretty sure it's really good, but
yeah.
I want to hit things with my car and then go off the track.
Yeah,
Well, you'll go off the track. You're just going to lose.
Them.
You're going to have a bad time.
Simulation racers are those things you're either in love with or completely hate, and there's no middle ground with it.
It's the same reason I probably don't play, like, Madden or FIFA or anything like that. It's like, I don't get out of this what everyone else would from liking the base material.
Yeah.
Now, it should be noted that Gran Turismo is, by its definition, very primitive in what it does. It's unforgiving. You have to deal with license tests. You have to deal with weight modeling, which is insane. Like, you if you go up a hill the wrong way and the weight in your car shifts, you're going to go off the track. Like, Forza ignores that because that's insane, but that's something you have to deal with in Gran Turismo. But it's very punishing. And, like, if you were to try, like, just, like, red boxing the latest Forza and just play something with, like, unlimited rewinds with driving lines, you might want to try that. Just see how it is now a modern simulation racer plays.
Did you guys all have both instruction manuals?
I did.
No.
Okay.
I mean, maybe I bought it off PSN.
Okay,
so maybe there's some stuff in there.
The original game came in a two-disc case, and it was a one-disc game. But it came in a two-disc case because it had two really thick instruction manuals. One explained how all the different modes in the game worked, you know, like what you'd expect. And the entire second booklet was just how to drive like a race car driver.
Marry a model and wear a scarf?
No.
It also helps, yeah.
That's how to party like a race car driver from the 70s. But, no, it's all about... Gran Turismo 4 did this better because they licensed that part of the manual out to Skip Barber School of Racing, who explained things a lot better. But it talks about what the apex of the corner is, why you go high in and high out and low in the middle, what a late apex is and why you would do it and what an early apex is. Like all these explanations of what you're supposed to be doing.
The difference between understeer and oversteer, like the camber of your tires. It just the stuff this thing simulates is insane.
Yeah, there was a time like before this, Need for Speed had licensed cars, but your options were, I don't think you had options on those cars. I think you could pick the paint color. Yeah. That's it.
Yep.
Well, cool.
All right. So
Gran Turismo.
We'll put a bow on that. This Literates Book Club.
Done.
That car for Christmas.
So
next up is Brian.
Okay.
What? Yes. Well, next up is me.
Okay.
And I pick Gunpoint, a game by Tom Francis, a stealth game about rewiring things to solve puzzles and breaking and entering, and cool robot pants that let you fall from any height.
I like
robot pants. Did you know that, Imran?
I don't know anything about the game. I own it.
Nice.
You're going to love this game.
You've played it, right, Mark?
I finish. Like, this game could be three times longer than it is. I would still be in love with it.
I'm looking forward to replay this, giving me a chance to replay it. Because I played through it once, and I've been meaning to do a second playthrough less stealthily, more punchily, and see how that goes.
I'm pretty sure this is going to be very high on Game of the Year list.
Yeah.
Short games, did you guys hear about this Dark Matter thing?
Just a little bit. I know it's like a 2.5D side-scrolling thing in space.
It looked beautiful, like an amazing concept. Like a survival, it looks like 2D survival horror in a space.
Yeah, survival horror Metroidvania.
Yeah.
But apparently at one point you just go through a door and then the game ends. It just, there's a screen saying, this is like, the whole fight against the hordes continue. The end.
The end. Wall of text.
Yep. Like, it's not even, like, an important door. It's just a door.
Is this an episodic thing?
No. They ran out of money, so they couldn't finish the game. Ooh, but they put it on Steam anyway. It did not indicate it was... It's not early access. It's a regular Steam game.
Well, it sounds... The worst things could happen. You could, you know, be day one Gary's incident.
But Steam pulled it because they've received reports of something wrong with the end of the game.
Nice.
It's actually pulled now.
Yeah, well, you can't buy it now. The listing's still there.
I wonder how that works. Is like, would that be counted as a rare game? Can I put that on like a USB flash drive and sell it as a rare game? Probably not.
I mean, it's a beta, but maybe they'll have the option for the original version.
So I like that Matt just realized that he does own Gunpoint.
Yep.
Yeah, I didn't want to like interrupt this to say that, but yeah, I checked in on Steam. I was going to start it downloading while we were still on the podcast, and
He says, "You want to play it now? You own this." Like, oh, I do.
Play now.
Well, presumably there'll be a point where we can all family share this stuff.
Nightmare family.
Yeah, so we wouldn't have to like all separately buy games unless we're going to play them together.
Right.
Like, I think I got it for like a buck on a Steam sale, so I don't really care that much on this one.
Well, fuck them. If I don't have to pay them a buck, I'm not going to give them the buck. Idiots.
This one is definitely worth bucks.
It's worth 10 bucks.
Yes. So is Eldritch, which just dropped on Steam. And Dungeon Dashers is coming onto Steam October 25th, which is a game I think I've mentioned before.
So speaking of things that are coming out in the future, Watch Dogs got delayed pretty heavily.
Yeah.
Like a month before release.
And like push back like 4 more months. There's like some unidentified date in the spring, right?
Post-April.
Post-April.
Yes. Just one of those things we don't talk about much, but you know, it kind of pays to know. A month before a game comes out is like, yeah, that's pretty much when your game has to start going out to the printers.
Yeah.
Right.
That's when they've got to get the game code to the place to make the DVDs, to put into a case, to ship to the stores. It takes like a month to do all that.
I pinged a couple of sources about this, and I said this on Twitter, I think, but the reason was Ubisoft sent this game off to... Okay, so there are these firms that they review games. They're made of professional game reviewers, and they review games for companies to tell you pretty accurately what the Metacritic will probably be. And Watch Dogs was around 4 or 5.
Like out of
like 40
out of 10.
Okay, not like actually just 4.
So not good.
Yeah.
Because it was apparently a super buggy mess. There were apparently like the hacking didn't work. Like you target the wrong things constantly. That like you'd be trying to hack a car, but it would instead hack a traffic light, so you just get run over.
That seems kind of key in a game about hacking.
Yep. Did Wild Game Studio help on this game?
I think like it may have just only been the regular console versions, but you probably couldn't release those 6 months later after you fixed it. You'd have to release it all at once.
It kind of seems like one of those things where you have to marvel at the fact that it didn't seem this way in any of the live demos they did.
Yeah. I mean, again, that's one of the reasons that makes me think that it was the 360... Well, the 360 and PS3 versions that were causing the problems. So,
this is also thrown a wrench in bundles, right? Wasn't there a Watch Dogs PS4 bundle?
It was a Watch Dogs PS4 bundle and, I think, an Xbone bundle. So those people have to be compensated because I think their stuff is just getting switched to regular PS4s and Xboxes.
Yeah. Well, no, the game they're not going to get for PS4 would be Drive.
Drive Club.
Drive Club.
That was going to come... God, that was going to have a free edition that came with PS and Gold?
Free version, which is not the full game, but it's not a demo, so it's somewhere in between.
Yeah, it sounds like it's a free-to-play version. Like, you'd have to pay to unlock the additional tracks and cars.
Shareware.
But it was supposed to be, like, something that every PS4 owner got.
Yeah, because you get 30 days free when you buy a PS4.
Yeah. And it was basically their way of saying... Sorry, PSN Plus is essentially necessary now.
Yeah.
Have a free game-ish.
So now I'm in this weird place where, like, Watch Dogs is my, okay, I'll settle game.
Right.
That was going to be like, okay, this will be the thing that, like, I'll show off my PS4 with.
I can talk myself into this game.
Yeah. So now I don't, like, is it going to be Assassin's Creed 4? Am I going to have to really stoop that low?
Yeah. For me, if I was going to be buying a PS4, it would have been Drive Club. Like, at this point, I'm looking at those lineups, and I'm like, I don't... Not really anything I really want that much.
When is Second Son coming out?
February. Or February-ish. Okay. It'll probably get delayed.
What, so no love for Knack?
No. Nope. Like, not even a little. Like, everything I see about that game, I just really dislike... Okay, first of all, that art style, it just... It's not generic. It's very clearly DreamWorks, like, British cartoon, whatever style. But that style sucks so much. I hate looking at it.
Wait, was Knack the one where, like, you'd create a rock and then give the rock AI?
No, that's, God, what was that called? Project something? Project Spark.
Okay.
Yeah.
Knack versus Spark. And so what was Knack?
Knack was the character platformer where, like, he would change in different elements.
And there was, like, all these particles, and he was made of all these different bits of the environment that he could then, like, particles dissolve into.
Catholic deity Mark Cerny was working on it.
What?
There's a huge that like people fucking love Mark Cerny for reasons that I can't really understand.
Right. And Cerny. I just think of, isn't CERN the company behind the Hadron Collider?
Yes.
Are they? Okay.
Yes. Well, CERN. Well, not company, but NGO. Yeah, collective.
Yeah. So, and there was a brief period where I was literally looking at Killzone, like, do I want this? Is this going to be like where I end up? Is this my life now?
I guess I'll go with Killzone. Did you order the Watch Dogs bundle?
No, I ordered a regular bundle, which is okay, almost just paid off completely in, like, change.
Nice.
Because Coinstar apparently gives Amazon credit, and I had a shitload of coins.
Oh. Well, that's awesome. I've actually been using my coins. They built up, and then they've slowly been dwindling.
I have no reason to use them, because the only time I have coins is when I just happen to be using cash for some other reason. Everything else is just debit card.
I leave my coins in one of my drawers at work and use it for coffee money.
I leave my coins in a coffee mug.
And use it for work money.
And use it for work money.
To pay work to hire me.
Cool.
I'm sure that's how it works, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's totally exactly how it works. All right. So we'll be playing Gunpoint over the next 2 weeks.
All right. So real quick, Ryan, what have you been playing?
Borderlands. Like I said, I'm going to soon start up Bioshock Infinite. Because I've been just kind of killing time, playing other things, Borderlands, Spelunky,
Play Eldritch. Bioshock Infinite. What's wrong with you?
I needed to take a break after playing Far Cry 3. I needed to just cleanse my palate a bit.
I get the feeling we're going to have like a big discussion about that game next month or month after next.
Whenever I beat it.
No, I mean like for Game of the Year stuff.
For Game of the Year stuff.
Because people are going to hate Imran and I over this.
Well, I haven't soured on it, but I think I'm moving it much further down my list than I thought I was.
We're going to have a fight. It's going to be a fight.
Yep.
We're going to get knives.
Just a real quick question. When are we doing Game of the Year?
I want to say last week of December again. Or not last week, but last week. Sure. Forward, so like mid-December.
Yeah. Okay. And Steam does a Black Friday, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, it's like $10 at Amazon now.
Oh, I don't normally buy games through Amazon.
It's a Steam. It gives you the Steam code.
Yeah. Okay, I'll look into it. I'm just like, there's a couple PC games that are probably gonna be like, I probably should be playing for Game of the Year, but you know, maybe I'll work on The Last of Us now and then wait for.
I suggest Black
Friday for the PC games.
Among discussions we'll have on Game of the Year, I suggest we all play Brothers and
yes.
Well, we've all played Gone Home, so. Those are things that are public when they come up.
Probably want to play Stanley Parable.
How much is it?
$10.
I think it's $12 right now.
Okay, maybe I'll look into it.
Yeah, that's been getting a lot of buzz lately, and it's something that has piqued my interest.
It's one of those things where I can't look into it because I know that's going to ruin it for me.
Yes,
right. But I'm not sure enough that I want to buy it.
Yeah.
So
there aren't as many people telling me I need to play Stanley Parable as there were people saying you need to play Gone Home.
Which could be entirely because Gone Home was first. So,
and also, Gone Home, people would give you the elevator pitch. It's about a family in the 90s, and you have to find out what's going on with them. Stanley Parable, I've seen a picture of an office. That's all I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, no one's even saying the elevator pitch is like, you have to something. I don't know. I don't know what that game's about.
Make a parabola. Decorating?
I don't know.
What
you have
you
to
meant?
Put pictures in frames. I went back to Xenoblade Chronicles. I lost my save. Well, I lost my save game. Had to go to an earlier save on a memory card. So I finally got over it and have resumed playing that game. I lost like 8 hours of gameplay.
Mm.
Oh,
yeah, it was a lot. But yeah, so I have nothing new to add. I haven't even seen anything new since I started playing again this week. But God damn, that game is impressive. That's all I got.
What about you, Mark?
I've Dust and Elysian Tale, I assume.
That's a good game.
Yeah, it is. It was on sale for on Steam for like $5. Easily worth the 15 or 10 or whatever it is asking price. That is an amazingly good 2D platformer. It even does make the weird 2D platformer mistake of, okay, so you have an angled platform, right? you have to land exactly in the middle of the angle platform in order to like for it to register, because otherwise you go like you'll fall right through it.
Yeah.
Which sucks, because many times there are spikes on either end of these fucking platforms. So you'll jump and go into the spike and then fall back, and that's the only real gripe I have with it. But just an amazing game, ton of character. The combat is simplistic, but it's also good, I guess. Like there's a one attack button, and there's another button where you like you spin your sword around, and it successfully combined these two very basic elements into like 10 or so different attacks that you can pull off at any time. And most of the enemies are cannon fodder, but the way you can to dispatch them is creative, and it's just enormous amount of fun.
It gets a little repetitive towards the end, because not much changes.
Yeah, like they change up the enemy styles every once in a while. Like now I'm going against this horrible bladed lady part Tyrannosaurus Rex who goes into a spin move that basically just kills you in one hit. So that sucks.
Fucking awesome.
Yeah, she's a regular enemy. She's not a boss, and you have to parry that thing or you're fucked. But it's has that thing where like you level up. So you're weak at the beginning of the game or like any given point in the game, but once you get a couple levels, you completely destroy everything. So it's kind of hard to tell what your actual power value is. But yeah, it's just if you need to play this game. I understand a lot of people were turned off of it because of the art style, because of the free or whatever. That's just if you have the argument, it's complete bullshit. That's the same thing as looking at Wind Waker and saying, "Oh, it looks like a kiddie game." It just you got to get past that. It's an amazing game. It has a ton of heart, a ton of character. Play this thing; it deserves to be played.
So I've been playing more Pokemon, mm-hmm. and I think I understand what like bothers me about single player Pokemon right now. Like in the more recent generations. Is that they've really, really de-emphasized the idea of the boss fight. Like, the gym leaders in this game are just... You steamroll them. You do not have... Like, even the rivals. The rivals in previous Pokemon games could be actual threats.
Right.
But now there's, like, there's... We have one... I have one rival that's this girl that challenges me to a boss fight every so often, but she never gets more than three Pokemon that I've seen. Every time it's like, oh, I don't believe I lost. I can't believe it. I'm like, you have three Pokemon. I have six. This is not an even fight.
Do you think the game was mainstream to make it like easier for like people like
I mean, I'll tell you what I think happened.
Yeah.
Like in Gold Silver, there was this gym leader named Whitney who had a Miltank that knew Rollout. And if you didn't know how to deal with that, that thing was going to kill you every time. Mm-hmm. And that spike of difficulty, and Pokemon games aren't hard, but they have these occasional difficulty spikes.
Right.
Like, that one was just probably stymied so many people, and they probably took that to, like, took a number of complaints about it. So they, since then, each time gym leaders have had less and less impact.
Can you, up that difficulty level of these games, or is it set?
It's set. Okay. You can make it easier, and if you wanted to turn that off, like, there's the thing in this game is you can turn on experience or share, which gives every Pokemon that you're not using 50% of experience, even if they don't participate in battle. So everyone stays a pretty even level. And if you turn that off, you could probably like make it somewhat more difficult. If you turned off the ability to switch whenever they announce they're going to bring a new Pokemon in, that probably makes it a bit more difficult, but it also probably makes it a bit more tedious too, so it's kind of a trade-off. But what they need to do is they need to have a thing where like you can have a way that enemies scale to your level. Like, I don't know how they want to couch it, if they want to say, like, a reporter's following you around and your Pokemon team is famous, so gym leaders are getting stronger in relation to you. That would be fine. But I want some more degree of difficulty here. I don't need a gym leader to have, like, two Pokemon and both of them are just single evolution or first evolution Pokemon.
How long does it take the game to, like, max out its difficulty level? At what point were you just rolling over everything?
Like, the first gym?
Wow, really? Like,
most recent gyms, I've been 10 levels over.
Oh, wow.
Which...
Is that just you just over-leveling, or you're just there naturally?
I'm just there naturally. Like, I've actually been avoiding things, so I can, like, I don't avoid trainers, really, but I'm not fighting any Pokemon that I've already captured. I'm not really doing anything out of the ordinary. Maybe I should be switching my team up more and just bringing in Pokemon that I don't really use that much, but... That's not the way I've usually played the games. And I miss that feeling of, like, when you'd face a gym leader and he'd just wipe out your entire team and, like, you make that last-ditch effort with a non-effective Pokemon and somehow you win. Mm. Like those were the best times in those old games, and now I feel like they've completely de-emphasized that for a more thing, so nobody has to face those difficulty spikes.
New game plus or anything. That's it.
I mean, once you get in previous games, I don't know about this one, but once you beat the Elite Four, everybody gets stronger.
Okay.
But after that, I will probably have a godlike team, so I'd probably have to just start a new team anyway. But I still really enjoy the game for different aspects. It's just I miss those times where it was fairly difficult and you had to think about it a lot. But oh well. Video games.
Pokemans. I'm going to give that game a try.
All right. You probably enjoy it.
I'll hold you to that.
Belida.
Imran.
Imran? Oh, yeah.
Okay. Imran.
Sounds like something.
Bye.
Good night.
Like Soviet Russian version of my name.
Soviet.